We're going to start from the first Mishnah on Kuf Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay, so again, we're continuing this discussion that we started yesterday about a person who's waiting by the edge of the Tchum right before Shabbos ends. So the Mishnah says here, Machshichen al ha-tchum lefakeach al iske kala v'al iske hameis lahavi lo arun v'sachrichim. So again, this is kind of a rephrasing of what we were discussing a lot yesterday, which is that a person is permitted to wait by the edge of the Tchum before Shabbos ends if their goal is to go and, bring, the myrtle branches for the wedding, or to go and bring a coffin and shrouds for a funeral. Those are all permissible reasons to wait by the edge of the Tchum before Shabbos ends. Then the Mishnah continues, Nachri Shehevi Chalilin B'Shabbos Lo Yispod Bahen Yisrael Elo Imkein Ba'u Mimakum Karuv. So the Mishnah says that, let's say for example, a non-Jew brings flutes for a eulogy. They used to use these flutes as a form of eulogizing the dead. So the Mishnah says that a Jew is not permitted to use those flutes at a funeral after Shabbos unless they came from a makum karuv. Now the Gemara is going to have a machlokas, what exactly that means. So we'll see that in a second. Then the Mishnah says, Asu lo aron v'chafru lo kever, yikaver bo Yisrael, v'im b'shvil Yisrael, lo yikaver bo olamis. And the Mishnah says that if let's say, for example, a coffin was made or a grave was dug by a non-Jew on Shabbos, so the Mishnah says that a Jew is allowed to be buried in that grave or in that coffin, unless it was expressly dug for the Jew. If you know that the non-Jew dug that grave or brought that coffin in for a Jewish body, then a Jew is never allowed to be buried in that grave or in that coffin. So the Gemara wants to know, "Mai mimakum karuv?" What did the Mishnah mean when it said that if the non-Jew brought the flutes mimakum karuv from a close place, then you're allowed to use them after Shabbos? So the Gemara presents a machlokas. Rav amar mimakum karuv mamish, Ushmuel amar chayshinan shema chutz lechom alanu. So according to Rav, it means that it comes from a very close place. In other words, Rav says the only time that you're going to be allowed to use these flutes right after Shabbos is if you know for a fact that the non-Jew did not violate Shabbos while bringing them to you. So meaning, for example, if you know that these flutes were coming from inside of the Tchum, so you know that the flutes weren't coming from somewhere far away, then Rav says that it's mutter. But if you're unsure, then it's going to be a problem. Whereas Shmuel says no. Shmuel says as long as you don't know for a fact that it came from outside the Tchum, even if you're not sure exactly where they came from, that would be enough to allow you to use the flutes at the funeral right after Shabbos. So the Gemara now tries to figure out which of these opinions is correct. The Gemara says, Deka masnisin kavase de Shmuel. So Shmuel's position seems to be more correct, seems to be supported. Deka tane, asa lo aron v'chafar lo kever yikaver bo Yisrael, Alma misfeka sharei, hachanami misfeka sharei. So the Gemara says that on the one hand, we have a brisa that seems to support Shmuel. Our Mishnah seems to support Shmuel, because the Mishnah says that if the non-Jew made the coffin or he dug the grave, then the Jew is allowed to be buried. So you see that in that scenario, that's a case of suffix, meaning we're not 100% sure who he dug the grave for, whether he dug it for a Jew or a non-Jew. So because it's only a suffix, Shmuel says you're allowed to bury a Jewish dead body there. The implication, therefore, is that if you're not 100% sure whether the flutes came from in or out of the Tchum, that would be enough to allow you to use the flutes at the funeral. So that's supporting Shmuel's position. On the other hand, the Gemara says, V'sanya kivase derav, irshe yitzra v'nachrim darimba, v'haysa b'merchatz ha-merachetzes b'shabes, imrov nachrim l'erev rochetz b'miyad, imrov Yisrael, yam d'ad k'dei sheyecha muchamin, mechza al mechza, ad k'dei sheyecha muchamin. So Gemara makes the following distinction. Let's say you live in a city that has a mixture of Jews and non-Jews, and there's a public bathhouse that you want to use right after Shabbos. The problem is that, there's a chance that the bathhouse might have been heated on Shabbos itself. So the Gemara says it depends on what the majority population of the community is. We've spoken about this before earlier in the Masechta. If the majority of people in town are not Jewish, you can assume that the water was heated for the non-Jews, and therefore you would be allowed to use the bathhouse immediately after Shabbos. However, if the majority of the population is Jewish, or even if it's just 50-50 is Jewish, so then you have to assume that it was heated up for the Jews, which means that you're going to have to wait what's called Bichdei Sheyasu. Bichdei Sheyasu is was a term that we've spoken about in the past. Bechdei sheyasu basically just means that you have to wait the amount of time after Shabbos that it took for the water to be heated up. So this is a term that applies in general when it comes to malacha. Let's say you find out that a non-Jew did some kind of a malacha for you, and now you want to benefit from that malacha after Shabbos. So the halacha is that you have to wait that amount of time that it took the non-Jew to do the malacha on Shabbos. That's how long you have to wait after Shabbos. Now, why that halacha should be so, that's the whole discussion in the Rishonim, whether that's something intrinsic? Is that just a kenas to prevent you from violating amira la'akam in the future? That's a whole discussion of what the nature of that halacha is. But the bottom line is that there's a problem of what's called b'chdei sheyasu of requiring you to wait a certain amount of time. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ba'ambati k'tana im yesh barishus rochitz b'miyad. Rabbi Yehuda says that if it's a relatively small bathhouse, so if there's a rishus, then you can bathe right away. What does that mean? My rishus. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Berei de Rav Yehuda. Im yesh ba'adam chashuv sheyesh lo asara avadim shemechamemin lo yud kumkamin bevasachas ba'ambati ketana mutter lirchot pamiyad. So comes the Gemara and says that if you have an adam chashuv, if you have someone of prominence who has, let's say, has 10 servants, and his 10 servants are all coming with these, pitchers or things of hot water, and they're going to use them right away, so then that would be permissible. In other words, the case the Gemara is basically illustrating here is where you have, let's say, a very chashuv individual, and this guy has 10 servants, and all 10 of his servants are going to heat up the water for him right after Shabbos. In other words, normally we assume that, you know, it takes a little while for the bathhouse to get hot, but here the case is very prominent individual has 10 servants who are working for him. So the assumption is that the water can get heated up very quickly. So if you have almost like, let's say, like a private bathhouse that was being used by a very chashuv person, and you can assume that his 10 servants heated it up for him after Shabbos, then you would be allowed to use that bathhouse right away, assuming that you can assume that the bathhouse was probably heated up after Shabbos. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Asu lo Aron v'chafru lo kever. We said that if a non-Jew either, made a coffin, or if he dug a grave, so then you would be allowed to bury a Jew in there. So the Gemara asks, "Am I hachanami yamtin b'chdei sheyasu? Why are you allowed to bury a Jew in a grave that was dug by a non-Jew, or in a coffin that was made by a non-Jew? Why not say that we should insist that you wait again that amount of time until Shabbos is over? In other words, why are we saying that if the non-Jew dug a grave, but we're not 100% sure who he dug it for, then you can bury the Jewish dead body right after Shabbos? Why don't we insist that you have to wait, X amount of time after Shabbos? Just like by any other time a non-Jew does a malacha, you have to wait, what's called, again, b'chdei sheyasu, wait the amount of time that it took for the malacha to be done on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, no. Amar Ula be'omid be'isratia. Ula says the case is where the grave is in the, or the coffin is I'm sorry, the grave is in the middle of the street. And the assumption is that Jews typically don't get buried in the middle of the street. It's not, usually get buried in a cemetery. So therefore, because this grave is in the middle of the street, it's pretty clear that it was being dug for a non-Jew. So if you now want to use it for a Jew, that would be okay. So the Gemara says, okay, Tenach Kever, Aron Ma'ikol Amemer. So that explains the case of the grave. But what about the case of the coffin? So Amar Rabbi Avo b'mutal al kever. Rabbi Avo says, no, the case of the coffin is where the coffin is already sitting on top of a non-Jewish grave. So again, it's pretty clear that the coffin is being intended, to be used to bury a non-Jew. And then if you want to turn around and use it for a Jew, that would be permissible right after Shabbos. Again, in these cases, you don't have to wait b'chdei sheyasu. You don't have to wait, let's say it took the non-Jew an hour to dig the grave. You don't have to wait that hour after Shabbos if the grave is in the middle of the street, because it's pretty clear that he wasn't digging a grave in the middle of the street for a Jew, because the assumption is that Jews normally are going to get buried, in a cemetery. Or if, let's say, the coffin is sitting on top of a kever that was set aside for a non-Jew, you don't have to wait at all after Shabbos. You can use the coffin right away, because again, it's pretty clear that he was doing it, he was making the coffin or bringing the coffin in for the non-Jew. Okay, fine. So the Mishnah now continues. The Mishnah says, Osin kol tzarchei hames. A person is permitted to tend to a dead body on Shabbos. So what does that mean? So the Mishnah says, Sachin umedichino. So for example, a person is allowed to smear oil on a mace. If, let's say, they want to, make sure that the body doesn't, start to smell. They're allowed to smear oil. They're allowed to clean it, to rinse it off. Uvilvad shelo yazez bo aver. The only thing is, you have to be very careful not to move any of the limbs of the dead body, because a dead body is muktza. So you can't move a limb. You can smear oil on it. You can rinse it off, but you cannot move any of the limbs. Then the Mishnah says, shomten es akar mitachtov, umatilin osoal hachol, b'shvil sheyamten. Then the Mishnah says, let's say You want to make sure, you want to prevent the body from decomposing. So what you can do is, you can remove a pillow from underneath the head of the dead body that's keeping it propped up, and you can move the entire body and put it on the sand to prevent it from decomposing. Now again, in this case, you're obviously moving the body, but you're not necessarily moving a limb. Let's say, for example, two people are picking up a dead body, one from each end, and they simply shift it from a bed to the sand, so you're not specifically moving a limb, you're moving the entire body. So that's okay. In that case, if you want to prevent the body from decomposing, you're allowed to do that. Again, you just can't move individual limbs. You can't pick up a leg, you can't pick up an arm. That's going to be a problem on Shabbos. Then the Mishnah says, Koshren es halechi, lo sheyala ela shelo yosef. The Mishnah says, let's say the mouth or the jaw of the dead body is starting to open up, and you want to prevent that from happening, so you're allowed to tie the jaw together on Shabbos. The Mishnah says, you can't tie it up so that the jaw goes back to the way it was, but rather to prevent it from falling down or from opening up any further. Okay, then the Mishnah says, v'chin kora shenishpira, somchin osa besav sol oba arukos hamita, lo shetala ela shelo tosef. The Mishnah has a similar halacha, which has nothing to do with the dead body, but a similar concept that says that, let's say, for example, one of the beams in my roof is starting to collapse, is starting to break, so I'm allowed to prop up the beam using a bench or using a bed frame on Shabbos. Again, not because I'm trying to raise it back up to its original height, but I'm simply trying to prevent it from completely collapsing and falling. That would be permissible on Shabbos. So the Gemara now asks, "V'ha'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ma'ase b'Talmido Shal Rabbi Meir, she'nichnas acharav leves hamerchatz, bikesh lahadiach karka, Amar lo ein madichin, lasach karka, Amar lo ein sachin." The Gemara asks, "How can the Mishnah say that I'm allowed to smear oil and rinse off a dead body on Shabbos?" The Gemara cites a story about one of Rabbi Meir's students who followed him into the bathhouse, and his student wanted to scrub the floor of the bathhouse on Shabbos, and Rabbi Meir said, "No, you can't do that." Then he wanted to pour oil on the floor of the bathhouse on Shabbos, and Rabbi Meir said, "No, you can't do that either." So the question is, if you're not allowed to smear oil or to rinse off the floor of a bathhouse, why am I allowed to do that on a dead body? What's the difference? So the Gemara says, no, there's a big difference. The Gemara says, "Karka bekarka mechalfa, meis bekarka lo michlaf." The Gemara says that, again, technically speaking, the only time it's problematic to smear oil or to rinse is on a dirt floor, because there's a concern that you're going to come to create a hole and you're going to violate chorish. Can everyone please mute themselves? I hear a lot of background noise. Okay, so the Gemara says again that the issue of smearing the oil and of rinsing the floor is really only a problem on a dirt floor, because again, there's a concern of choresh that you're going to come to create a hole. Now the bathhouse, the assumption was made of tiles. There was no dirt here, but it was a gzera derabanan, because in other words, Chazal forbade you from smearing the oil on a tiled floor lest you come to do so on a dirt floor. So that's a very legitimate gzera derabanan, because one could easily confuse the two, you know, the two different types of floors. In contrast, when it comes to a dead body versus a floor, those are two totally different things. So the fact that you're allowed to smear oil or rinse off a dead body is not going to confuse you and make you think that you're also allowed to do that on a floor. So that would be problematic. Okay, fine. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. The Gemara says, "Kol li isuye mai la suya hadasan rabanan." Mevin klei mekar uklei matachos umanichen al kreso kedei shelo tafuach ufokakin es nekavav kedei shelo tikanis bahen haruach. Comes the Gemara and says that, let's say, for example, I have some cold utensils. I have some kind of metal vessels, metal utensils, and I want to put them on the stomach of the dead body to prevent it from bloating, to prevent the body from swelling. So that would be permissible. I would be allowed to do so. And also, the Gemara says that I'm allowed to plug up the orifices of the mace of the dead body to prevent any air from getting in, which would therefore cause swelling. So the Gemara says, "V'yav Shlomo Amar b'chachma." So Shlomo HaMelech says at the end of Koheles, and by the way, this Gemara that we're starting now is going to really take us all the way very far into tomorrow's daf, where the Gemara is going to be darshaning many, many psukim at the end of Koheles. That, and the Gemara starts right now by expounding psukim from Koheles. The pasuk says, "Ad Shlo Yirasek Chevel HaKesef," until the silver cord has not yet snapped. What does that mean? Zechor Hashidra. That refers to the spine. Visarut gulas has a hav. The golden bowl has broken. Ze'ama, that's a reference to the aver, to the penis, which emits a fluid and semen. And then visishaver kadal hamabua, that the bowl has shattered in the hole. Ze'akeres, that's a reference to the stomach, which swells. And then v'narutz ha'galgal el habor, that the wheel has broken in the pit. Zeperesh, that's a reference to feces, to fecal matter. V'chein hu'omer, the pasuk says in Sefer Malachi, v'zeirisi peresh al pinechem, peresh chagechem. Hashem says, I'm going to smear the feces in your face, the feces of the karbanos that you bring on the Yomim Tovim. Amar Rav Huna of Ha'amri lo Amar Rav Chaga, Elu b'nei Adam sheminichin divrei Torah va'osin kol yemeim kachagim. This is a reference to people who forsake the words of Torah, and they treat all their days like it's a holiday. They don't take anything seriously. They just kind of do whatever they want. Amar Rabbi Levi, Amar Rav Papi, Amar Rabbi Hoshua, la'achar shloshe yomim kreso nifkaas v'nofeles lo apanav v'omeres lo tol mashe nasatabi. After 3 days, so the mace, right, the dead body, the stomach starts to split open, and then the body falls on its face, and then the neshama says to Hashem, basically, take me back to where I came from. In other words, take back what you put inside of me. Okay. The Mishnah now says, "Ein ma'atzmin es hames b'Shabbes, v'lo b'chol im yitzias nefesh, v'hamatzim im yitzias nefesh, hareza shofech damim." Comes the Mishnah and says that a person is not permitted to close the eyes of a dead body on Shabbos. Again, on Shabbos, that's not really a chiddush, because on Shabbos we already said that moving any of the limbs of a dead body is a violation of muktzah. So that's for sure a problem on Shabbos. But even during the week, let's say a person is still alive, they're what we call a ghost. They're mamish, you know, they're 5 minutes away from dying. They're on the brink of death. So the Mishnah says if a person is still alive even during the week, shutting their eyes is actually a violation of ritzicha. It's considered murder. When you close the eyes of a person who is still technically alive, the Mishnah compares that to murder. The Mishnah says it's ki'ilu shofech damim. It's as if you killed the person. So the Gemara explains Tanu Rabbanan hama'atzmo im yitzias hanefesh hareza shofech damim. That's what we saw in the Mishnah. If you close the eyes of a person who is still technically alive, then you are considered a murderer. Mashal l'ner shekava v'holeches, it's comparable to a candle that is about to be extinguished. Adam meniach etzba'o aleha miyad kavsa, if you put your fingers over the flame, it will immediately be extinguished. Tanya, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Harotze sheyis atzmu enal shalmes, no feach lo yayin bechotmo, venosein shemen bein rise enav, veochazo beshne godli raglov, vehin misatzmin me'elan. If you want the eyes of a dead body to close without actually physically closing them, then you should blow wine up its nostrils, put oil between the eyelids, and grab onto the two big toes of the mace, and then somehow the eyes will close by themselves. I'm not really sure how that works, but that's what the Gemara assumes. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tanya Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Tinok ben Yomochai, Mechalalin Aloves HaShabbos, David Melech Yisrael Mace, Ein Mechalalin Aloves HaShabbos. Gemara has a famous halacha here, that for a baby, even for a one-day-old baby, if the baby's life is in danger, we are, of course, Mechal El Shabbos to save the baby. But once someone is dead, even if they are someone as prominent as David HaMelech, that's it, right? His body is mukta. We actually saw this way back earlier in the Masechta, back on Daf Lamed, I think it was, where the Gemara had a whole story about Shlomo HaMelech, who came into the Beis Medrash after his father David died on Shabbos, and asked him, you know, how am I supposed to move the mace? And we said, oh, and then the Chacham told him you could put a loaf of bread or a baby to move the mace, but the starting point is that a dead body, regardless of how great the person was when they were alive, is going to be mukta, is going to be problematic to move. So the Gemara explains, Tinok ben Yomuchai Mechal and Olav Es HaShabbos, Amra Torah Chalel Olav Shabbos Ech, David Melech Yisrael Meis in Mechalin Alav Kevin Shemeis Adam Batal Min HaMitzvos V'Hainu Dam Rabbi Yochanan B'Meisim Chavshi Kevin Shemeis Adam Nase Chavshi Min HaMitzvos. The Gemara says, what's the reason for this distinction? So the reason why I'm allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos to save a 1 day old baby is because the pasuk says V'Shamru V'Nei Yisrael Asa Shabbos Chalel Shabbos Achas Kedesh Yishmeru Shabbosos Harbe. That the halacha is that we violate Shabbos now now in the hopes that this baby will live a very long life and be able to keep many Shabbosos in the future. Whereas once a person is dead and a person is no longer obligated in mitzvos, so then we have no reason or no heter to be mechalal Shabbos to do anything to that person. It's not like we're saving their life; they're dead already. So at that point, you can no longer be mechalal Shabbos to you know to tend to the dead body. Okay, the Gemara says Vesanya Rishon ben Elazar Omer Tinok ben Yomuchai Ein Sarich Lishomro Min Hachulda Umin Haachbarim Avul Og Melech Habashan Mis Sarich Lishomro Min Hachulda Umin Haachbarim Shene Amaru Mora Achem Mechitechem Yehyeh Kol Zman She Adam Chai Ein Maso Mutelas Al Abrios Kevin Shemis Butla Ein Maso. The Gemara says that you know, a 1 day old baby does not require protection from animals. Most animals are not going to come in and start attacking even a 1 day old baby, whereas someone the size of Og Melech HaBashan, but once he's dead, so animals will start to eat away at his body. So the Gemara says, the reason for this distinction is based on a pasuk in Parshas Noach. In Parshas Noach, Hashem says, Hashem says that the fear of the animals will be upon you. So that fear of animals will only be upon you when you're alive. Once a person dies, the fear of the animals have over us goes away, and therefore they're no longer scared of coming to start to eat away at our bodies. Okay, the Gemara says, Amar of Papa, Nikitina, we have a tradition. Arye Abe Tre Lo Nafil, that lions do not attack two people. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Haka Chazina De Nafil, we see it's not true. You see lions do attack two people. The Gemara says, no, Hahu Kidu Rami Baraba, De Amar Rami Baraba, In Chaya Sholetes Ba'adam, Ad Sheninmelo Kivehima, Shenemar Adam Bikar Bal Yolin, Nimshal Kavhemos Ninmu. The Gemara says that animals in general, in this case lions in particular, will not attack a person who is acting like a human, but if you're acting like an animal, meaning if you are, you know, not living up to what, you know, the standards of which Hashem expects, you know, in terms of, you know, Torah and mitzvos, if you're not acting appropriately, then the animals will attack you because they'll just see you as an animal. They'll just see you as another animal to attack. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Aser Lishon Bevayas Yechidi, V'chol Hayashin Bevayas Yechidi, Achaz To Lilis. And similarly, the Gemara says that a person is not permitted to sleep in a house by themselves alone at night. And if they do so, the Gemara says, they will be attacked or overtaken by Lilith, right? Lilith is this like, I don't know, some kind of female demon or spirit or something or whatever that will overtake them if they're alone. And that, again, because it's considered to be dangerous. Vesani Rishon ben Elazar Omer, which basically means that a person should attempt to do, to perform mitzvos when they are able to do so, both physically and financially, and also when they're in control of their own bodies. And you shouldn't wait until it's too late when you no longer have the physical capability or the financial capability of doing mitzvos. Va'av Shlomo Amar B'chachma. So again, now we're going back to darshaning the psukim from Koheles. Shlomo says at the end of Koheles, Uzechores Borecha Bimei Bechurosecha Ad Lo Yav. So Shlomo HaMelech says you have to remember your creator, remember Hashem in your youth before the days of evil set in. What does that refer to? Says the Gemara, Eilu Yimei HaZikna. So old age is considered to be the days of evil. Why is that? Why is old age the days of evil? So as we'll see in a second in the Gemara, because at that point, many people's physical desires have been curbed. You know, people are not able to operate the same way that they were when they were younger. And then the pasuk continues, "V'higiu shanim asher tomar en livahem chifetz." And the years are coming soon about which we say that I have no desire. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, "Elu yemei hamashiach she'im bahem lo schus v'lo chova." The Gemara says that's a reference to Yemos HaMashiach, because according to this opinion in the Gemara, Yemos HaMashiach, there's no zchus or chova. What does that mean? So this is a relatively famous idea where the Gemara is saying that B'Yemos HaMashiach, we're not going to, you know, everyone's going to be living in this, state of, spiritual bliss, if you want to call it, and the whole concept of Schar V'Onesh, of, you know, getting rewarded for mitzvot or getting punished for Averos is not going to exist because everyone's just going to be serving Hashem. So the Gemara is basically saying you should rack up all of your Schar now, right now, before Mashiach comes, because once he comes, you're going to lose out that opportunity. However, the Gemara points out, this sentiment, this notion that, you know, we're not going to have schar v'onesh, that the world's going to look totally different when Mashiach comes, is actually against Shmuel. To Amar Shmuel, Ein bein ha'olam hazeh li'mos ha'mashiach, ela shibud malchios bovad, she'ne'emar ki lo yechdal avyon mikarev ha'aretz. Shmuel, and this is actually more famously known as the Shita of the Rambam. The Rambam basically adapted this position of Shmuel, where Shmuel basically says that nothing at all is going to change in the world when Mashiach comes. The only difference will be is that the Jewish people will no longer be enslaved or no longer be subjugated by the nations of the world. But in terms of the way the world operates physically, in terms of what's going on in the world itself, the world is going to be the same. And he says, therefore, you know, the same issues that exist in the world today are going to exist when Mashiach comes too. You're going to still have people who are poor. You're still going to have the same issues that exist now will exist then, with the slight exception that we will no longer be subjugated by the other nations of the world. So the Gemara now continues, Tanya Rabbi Elazar HaKapar Omer, La'olam Yevakish Adam Rachamim Amidazo, She'em Hulova Babino, Ve'em Benolova Ben Benova, She'ne'emar Ki Beglal HaDavar Hazeh. The Gemara says that a person should constantly dive into Hashem, that he should never be afflicted with the affliction of poverty. Because if he doesn't get, if he doesn't become impoverished, then his son will. And if his son doesn't, then his grandson will. The Gemara says that poverty, as we'll see in a second in the Gemara, is one of those things that affects everyone in some way. Because the Pasuk says, in Parshas Re'eh, next week's Parsha, Ki Beglal HaDavar Hazeh. Because of this matter, what does that mean? Tana Devir Rabbi Yishmael, Galgal Hu Shechozer Ba'olam. The Gemara is darshaning the word Biglal, which usually Biglal just translates as like because. The Gemara darshaning the word Biglal from the word Galgal, as in a wheel. That poverty is something which is a wheel that it turns, it constantly affects everyone in some way. Amar Rav Yosef Nikitina, we have a tradition. Haitzurva me Rabbanan lo miane. So we have a tradition that Talmidei Chachamim don't become poor. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? V'haka chazina demiane. That's just not true. We see that many of them are poor. The Gemara says, okay, in Isa demiane, ahadure apischa lo mihadar. So even if they're poor, they're not going to be so impoverished that they have to go, knocking down doors and begging for money. Fine, that's fine. So the Gemara says, Amar lo Rabbi Chila devisu. Rabbi Chila said to his wife, Ki asa anya, when a poor person comes to the house, agdime le rifta, give them bread, ki hechi de lakan mulivnach, so this way in the future, he'll give our kids bread too when they become poor. So Amra le, so his wife said to him, Mela kalayitlu, are you cursing us? Are you cursing our kids that they're going to become poor? Amar le, so no, krokok siv, ki biglal hadavar azev, estana devi Rabbi Shmuel, galgalusha chozer ba'olam. It's not me, it's a pasuk in Chumash. It's the drasha of Tana Devi Rabbi Yishmael, that poverty affects everyone in some way. So it's not, in other words, regardless of whatever I say, I'm not cursing our kids. He's saying it's just a fact of life that eventually they're going to be affected by poverty. So basically he's saying, you know, tell them to do chesed now, so this way the chesed will be reciprocated in the future. Tanya Rabbi Gamliel Barabi Omer, V'nasat l'cha rachamim b'richam cha v'herbecha. It's another pasuk from next week's parsha, Parshas Re'eh, where the Torah, in the context of the Ira Nidachas, says you have to express, you have to show rachamim, you have to give rachamim, and then Hashem will give you rachamim back. The Gemara says, "Kol hamirachim al habrios mirachim in alav min hashemayim, v'chol she'enu mirachim al habrios ein mirachim in alav min hashemayim." If a person displays rachamim, a person displays mercy to other people, Hashem will display mercy and kind to him. But if a person does not display mercy to other people, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not display that mercy to him. Okay. Now the Gemara goes back to the Psukim from Koheles that we were darshaning before. The Pasuk says, Ad asher lo sechshach HaShemesh v'ha'or, until the sun and the light has gone dark, zo padachas v'hachotem, that's an allusion to the forehead and the nose, which are the prominent features on a person's face. V'hayareach zo neshama, the moon which shines is an allusion to the neshama. V'hakochavim elu halisasos, so the stars is an allusion to the cheeks, the shavu ha'avim achar hageshem, and the clouds come back after the rain, zo ma'or einav shel adam sheholich achar habechi. That's an allusion to a person's eyesight, which is restored after they cry. What does that mean? So Amar Shmuel, ha'idimasa adar bain shenin hadra, mikan ve'ilach lo hadra. There's a kind of an interesting statement here, that tears, if a person cries before the age of 40, their eyesight will not be affected so much. Meaning, if you cry before the age of 40, your eyesight will eventually be restored. But if you're older than 40, the Gemara says that every time you cry when you're older than 40, somehow your eyesight becomes impaired, and it will never be restored if you cry after the age of 40. And the Gemara has kind of a similar statement here. V'amar Rav Nachman, Haikuchla ad arbayin shnin marvach, mikan ve'ilach afilu malya ka'avisna digirdai okume mokim arvuche lo marvach. So the Gemara says that when it comes to putting on eyeshadow, this again, this this is like medicinal eyeshadow. So the Gemara says that if you put eyeshadow on before the age of 40, that will improve your eyesight. Once you're 40 years old, so the Gemara says even if you apply a lot of eyeshadow, like the amount of the thickness of a weaver's needle, like you put on a ton of eyeshadow, the Gemara says that the best it can do is that it can maintain your eyesight, but it cannot actively improve your eyesight. So the Gemara says, "My kamash malan, the kama de alim yikuchlet feimal." The Gemara says, "You see from here, in general, that the more eyeshadow you apply, so typically the better your eyesight will be. Again, unless you're over 40, in which case the eyeshadow will simply retain your eyesight, but will not actually enhance your eyesight." Okay. Then the Gemara says, "Rabbi Chanina shchiva lebrati." Rabbi Chanina's daughter passed away. Lo halukabachela, but he wasn't crying after his daughter died. So Amrale devisu. So his wife said to him, "Tarnegolta pikas mi besach." What you think? Like a chicken left our house? Meaning she's like, why aren't you crying over the death of our daughter? It's not like we just lost an animal. It's not like we just lost a chicken. Like our daughter died. Why aren't you crying? So the Gemara says, "No, Amrale tarte tichla ve'ivra." He says, "You want me to have two problems in my life?" He says, "It's bad enough that I'm already, in a state of bereavement over the loss of our daughter. But if I start to cry, as we just saw from the Gemara, he was obviously presumably over the age of 40. So he said, if I start to cry, I'm going to lose my eyesight too. I'm going to have two problems to deal with." So he says, "I'm not crying because I don't want to go blind. I don't want to lose my eyesight." The Gemara says, "Savar lakihada amar Rabbi Yochanan Yishum Rabbi Yosi ben Ktsarta sheish demaosin." There are six types of tears: shalosh yafos v'shalosh raos, shal ashan v'shal bechi v'shal beis hakisei raos. So tears that are a function of either smoke, crying, or tears from going into a bathroom because you're in pain in the bathroom. Those are bad. Those are negative. Those are tears that will affect your eyesight negatively. Shal sam v'shal schok v'shal peros yafos, whereas tears that are a function of some kind of a medicinal drug or of laughter or of fruit that smells good or whatever it is or has a good flavor, so those are going to actually help your eyesight. Okay, so now the Gemara continues with the pesukim from Koheles. The pasuk says, "Biyom sheyazu shomrei habayis v'his avesu." So what does this pasuk mean? "Biyom sheyazu shomrei habayis elu haksalim behatzlaos." On the day that the guards start to tremble, that's a reference to the kidneys and the flanks, the parts of your body that are kind of protecting the rest of your organs. The men of valor, of strength, they will bow. Those are the thighs which support a person's strength. And the grinders will stop working. That's the teeth that grind up food. And the light will be dimmed from the windows. That's a reference to our eyes. Again, this pasuk is essentially a reference to old age. In other words, as a person gets older, so all these things start to deteriorate. So the Gemara says, "Amar le Kesar le Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya, my time lo asis leve Avidan. Why didn't you come to Bei Avidan?" We actually referenced Bei Avidan in the Gemara earlier in the Masechta. Bei Avidan was a place where people used to go to have all sorts of theological arguments. They would go, people who were trying to question Judaism, who were trying to defend Judaism. So people would go to this place, Bei Avidan. We discussed this back in the 16th parak, where Gemara had a whole discussion about what happens if the Sfarim in Bei Avidan catch fire on Shabbos. Are you allowed to save them or not? So the Gemara, so the Caesar asked Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya, how come you didn't show up to Bei Avidan to have some kind of a theological argument? So Amar Leh, he said, "Tur tlag schranoi gliden kalvohi." I'm sorry. "Tur tlag schranoi gliden kalvohi lo navchin tchanoi lo tochanin." He says, the snow on the mountain has melted, and the dogs are no longer barking, and the teeth are no longer grinding, which is basically a nice way of saying, he's getting older, and he's not able to to think on as high of a level and to make it and to function properly to come to Bei Avidan. Bei Rav Amrei Adelo Avidna Bachishna. So Bei Rav, the base manager of Rav, had a cute expression to express old age, that when a person gets older, it looks like they're looking for something they haven't lost. Because when a person is hunched over, it looks like they're looking for something that they lost, when in reality they haven't lost anything. That's just the way that they walk now. Fine. The Gemara says, "Tanya Rabbi Yosi Bar Kisma Omer Tava Tremi." So two is better than three. What does that mean? The Gemara says that the two legs that a young, healthy person uses to walk on is better than the three legs of an old person, meaning his two legs plus a cane. So even though he technically has a support with the cane, but because his regular legs are not as strong, so the two legs of the younger person are better. And then the Gemara says, woe to the person who goes but doesn't come back. What does that mean? Maihi amarachista yankusa. It's a reference to youth. Youth is something which, you know, once it's gone forever. Ki asa ravdimi amar yankusa kalila devarda, savusa kalila dechilfa. The Gemara says that youth is compared to a crown of roses, whereas old age is compared to a crown of thorns. Tana mishmei de Rabbi Meir, dok bekache v'sishkach b'nigre, sheneemar v'nispa lechem v'nihye tovim v'ra'alo ra'inu. The Gemara says that if you grind food with your teeth, it will give strength to your feet. In other words, if you eat enough, it will enhance your strength. So Amar le Shmuel Rabbi Huda shinana shari shakich va'ayolachmach ad arba and shnin mich lamale nikan ve'ilach mishte male. Shmuel says to Rav Yehuda, the term shinana appears in a number of places in Shas. Shinana either means like sharp one, like a Talmud Chacham, or it could mean the person with big teeth, from the word shane. So either way, he said to Rav Yehuda, open up your mouth and let the food come in, because until you're 40, so food is more beneficial for you. Once you're over 40, then it's better to drink more as opposed to eating more. Fine. The Gemara now says, Amar lehahu goza ala Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, mehachala karchina kamahavi. There was this guy who was, he was an apikores, he was a kofar. He also happened to be a eunuch. He also happened to, you know, to be castrated, and he goes to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha and starts to try and antagonize him a little bit. And he asks him, "How far is it from here to Karchina?" Now, Karchina was basically a derogatory way to refer to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha was not actually his real name. Karcha was an allusion to the fact that he was bald, from the word kereach. So he asked him, you know, "How far is it from here to Karchina?" Which he was basically making fun of the fact that he was bald. Essentially, that's what he was saying. So the Gemara. So what was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha's response? So Amarle, he said, "Oh." He said, "Kimehachal goznaya." It's the same distance as it is from here to Goznaya, which was an allusion to the fact that this guy was a eunuch, that he was castrated. So he was, you know, they were getting into a little bit of like a, you know, I don't know, they were kind of bickering back and forth at each other, essentially. So the Gemara says, "Amar le tzeduki barcha karcha barba, amar le ikra shlifa b'tamanya." So the tzeduki, the sapikores, says to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, you know, a bold goat cost 4 zuz, and then he says back to the apikores, he says, "Yeah, but a castrated one cost 8 zuz." So again, they're just kind of, you know, throwing these lines back at each other. The Gemara says, "Chazi delosi misani." The Apikores sees that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha is not wearing shoes. Amar le da'al sus melech da'al chamor ben chorin udimenali birigloi barinish deloha veloha dechafir vekafir tavminei. Says a guy who rides on a horse is a king. A guy who rides on a donkey is free. A guy who wears shoes is a person. He says, you don't have any of those things, so you might as well be dead, basically. So Amar le goza goza, tlas amartli tlas shamas. He says, you eunuch, you said these three things to me, I'm going to respond by saying three things to you. Hadras panim zakein, that, you know, the glory of a person's face is their beard. Simchat slav isha, the joy of a person's heart is their wife. Nachalas Hashem banim, and a person's inheritances are their children. Baruch hamakom shemenacha mikulam. Baruch Hashem, that Hashem has prevented you from having all three of those things, a beard, a wife, and kids. So Amar Lei, so the Tzeduki says back to him, Karcha Mitsuyana. So he says, is the bold guy, do you get into fights? Do you start to quarrel? Amar Lei, Ikra Shlifa Tochicha. He says back to him, is the castrated animal, the castrated goat, give rebuke? So again, they're basically, you know, bickering back and forth about these issues. So Amar Lei, Rebbe Reb Shimon ben Chalafta, Mipneima lo hikbal. Basically asked him, why didn't you come to visit me on Yontif? Why were you not mekayim the mitzvah of being mekabel pnei rabo beregel, of visiting your Rebbe on Yontif? So Amar Lei, he said, Sla'im nasu gvohim, krovim nasu rechokim, mishtayim nasu shalosh, mesim shalom bevayis batel. He says, basically, the rocks have become too high, which means that it's too hard for me to walk now. You know, what used to be close is now far away, which again, it's difficult for him to walk. He says, my two legs have now become three, because now I walk with the cane. And then finally, he says, mesim shalom bevayis batel, which means the thing that used to create peace in the house is no longer present, because it used to be that the thing that would keep the peace in the house between me and my wife was the drive for, you know, was his sexual drive. But now that he's too old, so he lost that drive, you know, for sexual pleasure. So now he has no reason to keep shalom bias anymore. He basically, his point was, again, as we've kind of seen, you know, many times in these Gemaras, he was too old. So he's like, you know what? I couldn't, I, you know, physically, I just couldn't make it anywhere. I was too old.